VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, it's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And if you stare carefully at the exact center of your radio dial, you might see the other grandfather, as I call him. Adam's son and daughter have a couple of grandfathers, and there's one visiting from South Florida today, and George is sitting in here just kind of watching the goings-on today before we all party later. So special welcome to the Grammaticus family. For a few days in town, they have another grandchild here, too, so it's pretty much worth the trip up here, I'd say. Oh, gosh, what are we about? We have a bunch of information for you today about a lot of different things. Adam's going to try not to smile when he delivers the market wrap, and I know he'll fail miserably because it's really quite a nice time today. So welcome to all of the regulars. Thanks for being here as always. And if you're doing a drive-by or if somebody's told you about it or you're just flipping through the channel, stick around for an hour. Hopefully we'll all learn something today and get some ideas about what's going to happen going forward. It's quite interesting times in which we live. Do want to remind you folks, for you control freaks out there like me, that if you would like to add to the content of the show or control the direction we go, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. And whatever you want to talk about will then be what we talk about. We will have a trivia question. And this is kind of off the wall a little bit, maybe. But I've been a little off the wall on these lately.
That's true.
I guess maybe it's age. My advanced years are showing. But anyway, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. I'm going to give you that one right now because I know a lot of you let your fingers do the dancing over the keyboards. In 1908, William Durant founded what company that made it, but not him, very famous and well-known? How's that one? So you can all look that up at your leisure, and if you want to make a gift certificate at Publix occur in your mailbox, then be the first one with the right answer.
Of course, we encourage you just to call in and guess without Googling it.
That's true, too.
We can't stop
But it. I know how your minds work out there.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. He's one of those guys that you would have probably thought might get famous for what he did, but it didn't work that way.
Well, that happens.
All right. Adam, see what you can do. I don't think there's any way to keep him from just grinning ear to ear on this one. Right, okay, well, now I do remind callers that I see the phones are ringing. So we're going to hesitate. Now, we always put callers directly to the front, and the lines are always open. Those are the rules. So the market wrap will come after we say, good morning, Greg.
Hello, how y'all doing this morning?
Oh, never better. If we were any better, there'd have to be two of me.
I understand. But you can make twice the money.
Well, I like that.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it is. Wow, you can call anytime.
You can send me a check.
Okay, we'll do that. Don't cash it, though.
This is an app. Oh, it'll bounce me in the face. Okay, nice. Beat up your listeners. I like that. That's good.
I've got to keep them humble, you know?
I'm sorry.
Humility is a good thing.
Absolutely. This is a pure absolute guess, but I think it was Cadillac.
You're thinking along the right line, but it's not the answer that we're looking for reasons that you'll hear if you keep listening.
Well, just ask another question that answer fits.
Okay, let's see. What company was named Cadillac? Oh, that would be Cadillac.
Okay.
I got nothing after that. But I like the way you're thinking, and I do appreciate it. Anything financial we can answer for you today?
No.
Okay. Well, keep listening. Maybe you'll get some questions.
Y'all have a good day.
Thanks for listening, Greg.
Thanks for the call. All right, Adam, the market this week.
All right. So did anyone else out there think we might see a new all-time high close on Friday?
There were other people that thought so,
yeah.
And they were disappointed.
Man, we got so close. We even crossed over the all-time high in late trading. So.
Less than one S&P point from a new record, which would, by the way, make this the second longest bull market of all time if we get that this week.
If we get it, which is, I think, entirely possible.
But, I do, too.
So yeah, on Friday we saw 2131.71, which was higher, but we couldn't hold it into the close. It closed at 2129.2, which was 0.92 points or 0.043% from its all-time high set on May 21st of last year. So close.
Yep, no cigar yet.
Yeah. Missing that mark didn't stop the S&P from having a great Friday or a great week, climbing about 1.3%. The Dow climbed 1.1%, crossing over 18,000 three more times since I asked the trivia question about how many times exactly. It has happened a few weeks ago. The NASDAQ narrowed the gap this week between itself and the other two, rising 1.9%. It's the only index of the three that is still negative for the year, but only by 1%, so we're almost there. The other two are up over 4%. And most analysts and people who predict these things were saying that this year was a 3% year. So,
and 2 weeks ago,
they were
stretching
high. Yeah. Yep. So you just never know what's going to happen.
I told Adam right before the show, in my opinion, the story of this week was actually last week.
Yeah, it really set up this week. Absolutely. But that whole Brexit thing was a non-event, just like we kind of thought it would be. And I don't think it's over yet. There'll be some more repercussions, but honestly, they're going to happen more in Europe than they are in here, not surprisingly. So one of the big reasons for the rally in U.S. equities on Friday was directly related to the jobs report that was released in the morning. Let me be clear. This jobs report made absolutely no sense. No sense.
It does to me.
If you believe the numbers, the U.S. economy added 287,000 jobs in June, just 1 month after only adding 38,000 jobs. Now, there's no way to look at this data and say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You just can't do it. Did the entire country go on vacation in May and take a pause from creating jobs? Did people take the sell in May and go away line a little too seriously this year?
We'll give you that answer after a phone call.
All right.
Good morning, Al.
Yes, I'd like to take a crack at your question.
Please do.
He was the president on the Union Pacific Railroad.
He may have been, but that's not the answer I'm looking for.
That's not?
No.
What was the question again?
It was, what company did he start that made the company famous, but not him? He is a relatively unknown name in history.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, I do have a question.
Well, good. Shoot.
If I had an account at somebody like UBS, and you wanted to transfer, would it be a good thing to transfer to Vanguard?
In my opinion, that could have been done yesterday, and it would still be late. So that's just my humble opinion. I have very little respect for the UBS trader types, and I have the utmost respect for the Vanguard people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, there's a better option. That would be to come and see us and transfer it to Schwab, but uh-huh. I digress.
And we use a lot of Vanguard funds.
Yes,
to be
we do.
Perfectly honest.
Vanguard is
company.
Absolutely the finest quality company. There are several that are equal, but there is nobody better at what they do for regular people.
Okay.
That's important.
All right.
So,
okay.
Yeah. But if you ever want to talk about it, give us a call at the office, and I'll have Adam tell you how right after the break.
Okay. Yeah,
and we do appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay.
And I really am dead serious about Vanguard. I think what they have done for the small investor in particular is save them lots and lots of money while making them able to get involved with this market that's making everybody who is trying hard enough into something fairly wealthy. So, again, I'll repeat the trivia question. What company did William Durant start that made that company very famous, but it did not make him very famous? Probably rich, but not famous. Okay, we're going to have to take a break here in a minute. Don't go anywhere. Lines are open, 222-8255, and you are listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. We are back. We weren't aware we were back, but we are back. Sorry about that. Live radio, you know. Anyway, this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are in the, we are in the throes of having another caller, so let's take that. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, this is Mary, and I have what I think is the answer.
Well, then tell us.
Founder of General Motors.
That is exactly right. That's why I told the first caller that he was thinking right. But what really made this company famous was he took these little pieces, many of which were surviving, many of which were failing, put them all together under the big corporate shell that became General Motors, which drove Detroit, if you'll excuse the pun, drove Detroit to become at one point the wealthiest city in the world. It was where the best real estate could be found and so on. And then all of a sudden, some other stuff happened.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case anymore.
No. In fact, one of my favorite General Motors stories is under Roger Smith. And under Roger Smith, he was heard to say at one point in time, General Motors doesn't make cars, it makes money. And I remember turning to my wife and saying something very simple at the time. That is a company in deep trouble. They have lost their way. When you think you make money instead of making cars, there is no good that can come of it. But you are absolutely right. And if you don't mind, I'll put you on hold and we'll get an address for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate
the call. Enjoy the show.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
And David, good morning. David?
You there?
Maybe we don't have David.
Might have lost him.
Well, all right, call back if you can. I don't know what happened. But anyway, back to the market wrap. Let's talk a little bit about that crazy jobs report and its impact on the market and why it's so goofy.
Yeah. Well, kind of like I was saying, you just can't believe those numbers. I mean, either every economist in this country has no idea what they're doing.
A possibility.
It is a possibility, but you would think when you take consensus that 2 months in a row, it wouldn't be off by $100,000 in either direction. I mean,
100,000 jobs.
Sorry, 100,000 jobs in either direction. So I would say it's almost statistically impossible for that to happen. So how is it that we saw that? I don't know. It just, the last time we saw
35,000 was Verizon workers coming back to work.
That has 30%.
That's a minuscule impact on numbers of that magnitude.
And the only other time that this has happened where they're off by 100,000 jobs, 2 months in a row in the opposite directions, was in 2004, and that was also an election year. So I'm not saying that it's rigged. I'm just saying that's when it was.
Okay, then I'm saying it. It's rigged. There.
Okay.
You heard it here first. The jobs report from... I think it was, yes, it was November. It was either October, November 2012. It was the last report prior to the big election. Suddenly and sharply, the unemployment rate fell. It's a mystery. Here we are, the last jobs report prior to the Democrat National Convention, and all of a sudden, there are 278,000 jobs created when the month before that was 11,000?
Yeah, it was revised down from 38,000 to 11,000.
And here's even more underneath the numbers, as I love to go. The establishment survey was the one that came out at 278,000. The household survey done by the same people at the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out 67,000. There were 347,000 more unemployed people than the month before. Huh? The job participation rate rose to 62.7, historically still absolutely awful. The unemployment rate ticked up 0.2. And the birth-death adjustment, which is what I call the made-up jobs, added 92,000 so that they could get up to 67,000 in the survey. Hmm. Now, I put 2 and 2 and 2 together, and I get about 2.75 on this one. I don't believe a word of it. I think it was 100% politically driven, but the trend is still for some job creation. So if you're worried about the economy falling off a cliff in the next few weeks, I think maybe you're off base a little bit. I really would not worry about it that much. I know a lot of people get whipsawed on things like the Brexit vote and all the gloom and doom you hear from everyone, but it isn't that bad, people. And I want to ask all investors one question. If they ask me why our market's doing so well, I come back with a simple question. Where else are you going to put your money?
Yeah, you can't find yield anywhere. Yeah,
I'm not going to Europe with it.
No.
I'm not going to Asia with it right now.
Exactly.
I'm not going into the money market funds or CDs.
Nope.
You can't get anything. Can't. So stocks are hot. You know what they say, the trend is your friend. Well, we have a trend, people. So if you're really scared of the market, go in slowly if you have to. But do not cut and run because of all the 24/7 idiots out there telling you that it's gloom and doom forever. And as I love to remind everybody, if the headline is followed by Stansberry Research or anybody like that, just skip on to the next story, please.
Yeah, but it's not just them right not now. Just them, you're no, seeing it from J.P. Morgan. You're seeing it from Goldman Sachs. They're all saying recession, recession, recession. And then those, when they say that, they might just be saying that there's a possibility. But then when it gets translated into an AP writer doing a story on Yahoo Finance, it's recession imminent, says J.P. Morgan.
And
but
remember,
that's not what they're saying at all.
And remember, economists have correctly forecast 9 of the last 4 recessions.
That's exactly right. And if you say it often enough, sooner or later, you're going to be right.
It's exactly right. So don't believe everything you hear. If you want a little pick-me-up, always tune into the show on Saturdays. And when we get really worried and tell you to run, then the world's caught fire with something.
There was some other economic news this week, and it was about as mixed as you can get. There were 15 data points, 7 beat their estimates, 6 missed, and 2 came in as expected. So kind of
I even think those were rigged.
Yeah, pretty much split right down the middle. I mean, I wouldn't say all of them.
No.
If you look at the services sector, had a big beat this month on the ISM non-manufacturing report. But that's not surprising. The services sector has been basically leading this entire recovery. We're not getting anything out of manufacturing, and services has been on fire. And if you go out to shop or go to a restaurant, you can see why. They're crowded. Mm-hmm. Everyone's out doing stuff, spending money.
But somehow they got a jobs number in one of those that turned it green. Well, I can't come up with that number. Did you notice that in that list? And if that one had flipped from green to red, all the statistics for the week would have had a different tone to them.
I didn't see that.
I was looking for trouble this morning. Then, I woke up in that kind of mood.
And then additionally, much to nobody's surprise, jobless claims came in at 254,000 versus an expected 269. So that was a good beat.
And they're probably going to be down again this week when it's reported next week for one simple little reason.
Verizon?
The unemployment offices were only open 4 days.
Oh, okay. That's the 70th straight week that it's been below 300,000, which is kind of the signal, the indicator. And that's almost as long as we've been doing the radio show. I'm not saying it's related, but, you know.
Well, it could be.
You never know.
There's a fine line between correlation and causation.
So commodities not named oil had a decent week. USO, the ETF that tracks the price of oil, fell 6.4%. But gold, IAU, the one that tracks gold, rose 3.3%, and silver was the big winner. SLV is that ETF, and it rose 7.6%. It's been on an absolute tear this year. Silver, or SLV, the ETF that tracks silver, is up 45.7% since its close on December 31st of last year.
Yeah.
And it's...
I told you.
Well,
for 6 years,
yeah,
I told you.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
For 6 months, I've been right.
It's really not that surprising, considering both silver and gold have been in bear markets for, I don't know, close to, what, 9 years?
Way too long.
Yeah, it seems like forever.
But it is a strange period of time when stocks and bonds and commodities are all rising and the world is shifting a bit. Return to higher wages, although slowly, but that's a good thing. A long-term outlook for inflation is rising a bit, partly because of labor costs, partly because of commodities, and partly because these things were so depressed.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing if you're in our camp of investing that says you ought to have a portion of your portfolio put into commodities and things like that.
Definitely.
Small portion. But
especially
portion.
Right now, it's if you don't have it, I would do it. I would recommend it now if you're lacking that in your portfolio.
You don't think it's too late, huh?
No, they're
still cheap.
No, they are.
Look at the chart.
On a relative basis, they are cheap.
Look at a 5 or 10 year chart for gold or silver, or anything, and man, they got a long ways to go back to the upside.
Exactly.
Yet, in my humble opinion.
And lastly, next week earnings season kicks off.
Yep.
So July 11th, Alcoa. That's the historic start of earnings season. So we'll see what happens there. Economists in general are saying that we're going to be way down this year. So I'm going to say that we're going to be up.
And I'm going to reveal in an upcoming show exactly what the market will end at for the year 2016. And that show will air the first Saturday in January.
Okay.
Okay. And I promise you, I'm going to be right.
Yeah, that's a bold, you're really stepping out on a ledge there.
Now, my guess, you know the difference between a forecast and a prediction?
Nope.
A forecast encompasses 100% of possibilities. A prediction is pick one of those. So my forecast is that the market will either be down or up or flat.
You want to give us a range?
My prediction, no, okay. I don't. My prediction is that we'll do fine.
Okay.
In other words, I would guess, and it's worth exactly what you just paid for it on the radio, I suppose. But my prediction is that we'll probably have an okay year. It will be up,
I think so.
and probably, unlike years gone by recently, a diversified portfolio will probably be rewarded a lot better than an undiversified portfolio.
Well, I'll tell you, through the first 6 months of this year, we're absolutely seeing that versus last year. Last year was the diversified portfolio was the last thing you could make money on.
Yeah, you had to be an individual stock picker who was right about things like Facebook and Google to make any money last year at all.
Yep, and everything else went down, and so you couldn't make any money. But this year we're seeing that reverse pretty solidly.
Yeah, absolutely. So are we pessimistic? No. Are we wildly optimistic? No. We're kind of just plodding along and using good judgment, I think, as far as diversifying and not making stupid decisions based on short-term events such as Brexit. Just let your asset allocation do the talking for a while. I think you'll be just fine.
So I did a little research. Okay. And, we always talk about I mentioned it earlier, the sell in May and go away theory.
Mm-hmm.
So what would have happened to you if you had sold in May and went away this year? So if you sold out on the last trading day in April, right at the close, you would have missed out on a 3.1% rise in the S&P. If you sold on May 13th, which was a Friday, so it was basically the middle of the month, you would have missed out on 4% of the increase. And if you held out till the end of May and sold on the last trading day at the close, you would have missed out on 1.6% of the potential increase. So which one of those would you have picked?
None.
That's the right answer.
D, none of the above.
Don't do it. Don't listen to that.
That's right.
It's ridiculous.
A stupid rule of thumb that isn't really a rule, and it has nothing to do with your thumb.
Okay.
All right. Well, why don't you tell the folks how to get in touch with us if they'd like to come visit us during our day jobs?
Sure. We have an office, and we are located right at the end of Butler, so we're easy to get to from everywhere in Jacksonville, and you can call us at 904-685-1505. We're also online at vanwayfinancial.com. If you need to find us, you might have to know how to spell our name. So it's VANWIE, or for those in the military, Victor, Alpha, November, Whiskey, India, Echo. And on our website, we do a lot of interesting stuff, including a blog. So check that out. We update it twice a week on most weeks, and it's got a lot of good content that we discuss on air and then some that we don't. So come back and check frequently.
All right. Well, after the break, I'm going to start a little something that's going to be sort of a long-term thing, and it's getting more and more personal as time goes by. I'm going to talk about aging and the things that are very important if you're an aging investor, that you've done well, worked hard all your life, you've got some things that are worth protecting, and there's some things going on with longevity that make it particularly scary, both for making your money last and for not having bad things happen. And I got a bunch of stuff about the crooks that help that happen, too. So don't go anywhere. We'll see you after the break. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment is sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance, because things are growing like I've never seen them grow before, and it's hot out there. So it's a lot cooler to sit in your little home office and write a check to Troy than it is for you being out there cutting your own grass. So give Troy a call at 662-9794, and you'll be glad you did. All right. Gosh, aging. Could be because I had a birthday a few days ago that this whole thing came up. Medical terminology is a mystery to me. For some reason, from the time I was a little tiny kid, I knew I never wanted to be a doctor. Don't know why. I just never did, and I knew it. Maybe it was the words that intimidated me. I don't know. But I've said for years that the only thing more impressive to me than a kid who can get into a medical school is a kid who can get out of the medical school. So I'm glad we have them. I'm glad they're smart, and I'm glad there are people willing to do this. Well, sometimes medical terminology overlaps with financial planning concepts. I was recently reading an article in Forbes by a fellow named William Baldwin. Some of you may be familiar with him if you like Forbes. I don't always think of his stuff as must-read stuff, but this one caught my eye. And it's called anosognosia. It was easy for me to say, right? But, of course, I had to look that up, not being in my day-to-day lexicon, so I looked it up. And what it said was it means real or feigned ignorance of disease. Okay. But Baldwin put it very colorfully, and he said that anosognosia applies to older people, particularly investors, this way. You've lost your marbles, but you don't know that. That's how it works. Put that way, I immediately understood it. In our day jobs, we have been confronted with this situation, both latent and in full bloom, more times than I care to think about. Recognizing that this problem may be in its infancy, either in yourself or in people you know, can prevent sudden and tragic losses that did not need to occur. And probably later today, maybe next week, I have a segment on some tips and triggers where maybe you can help yourself or somebody else from falling into any of these traps. So admitting that we are aging a bit and our chances of entering into this twilight zone period where we really don't know what we don't know, there are steps you can take to delay the process physically. I leave those to the medical community. But in the arena of competent financial planning, there are a lot of things that we have traditionally done and some new things we're starting to do. So, of course, people who have close and trustworthy family members have a natural advantage over those who lack family, or worse yet, have family but they don't trust their family. Dealing with the former is far easier for us, although it does require an admission on behalf of the client that this problem could arise or may be suspect to be arising. It's like a pre-Obamacare insurance policy. Once you need it, it's probably too late to get it. If you're no longer able to qualify as being of sound mind, you probably can no longer delegate responsibilities to a trustworthy surrogate. What do we do about that? Well, we try to circumvent that problem using very standard tools of financial planning, along with some techniques that are designed specifically for this. So some of the more common ones, the durable power of attorney, or DPOA. This designates someone to make financial decisions during your lifetime, hopefully circumventing large and unnecessary expenditures or losses. Healthcare surrogate. This is similar to the DPOA, only it covers the medical side of your later life. Last will and testament. This one is the document that takes over once you're gone and tells the world what your wishes are for the disposition of the assets that you worked your whole life to accumulate. This is so basic, it's so critical, and it is so often ignored. We talk about it. We always talk about it. All of us do. How many do it? Less than half, generally. Even half of lawyers don't have wills, people. Don't let that be you. And that's one of the first things Adam and I will do when a new client comes in. One of the questions we'll ask, do you have a will? If so, is it up to date? If not, how soon are we going to get it? Do you have a lawyer? Do you want one to be appointed for you, so to speak? We're not interrogating them. Being the week it was, I liked it.
That was Miranda, I believe.
It could be. Or, yeah, I just saw her the other day. Anyway, if you're feeling the need to do a better job of protecting your life's accomplishments, pay attention. There are a number of other tools that can further help you with you and your heirs with this process. Asset distribution following death should be made as easy as possible. After all, when it comes up, the affected individuals will probably be in a period of distress and mourning, or at least we would hope so, having just lost us. So whatever can be done by you in advance will help them, because they're not really going to be in the best frame of mind to be making good decisions, so maybe your chances of success will be increased. In many cases, also, it'll save them a lot of money. That's always a good thing. Additional planning possibilities include: establish online access for a family member or trusted friend to monitor your financial accounts, and it can be limited in scope so as not to allow those people to take money out of your accounts. Limit online transactions in favor of requiring all business to be done in your planner's office with you present. Voice recognition passwords are becoming available now with most of the big custodians, and all you have to do to get in there is have your voice and nobody else's. So it can really inhibit other people from getting into your accounts. Establish a revocable living trust with you as the trustee. You can name successors, and the trust will guide your assets through the process and go around probate. Caution here, it should only be done with an attorney. It's very complicated, but trusts are no longer simply for the wealthy. Your planner should organize meetings and direct the process, but the legal beagles have to be in there to do it right. So in addition to these sort of traditional approaches, we've developed some other things that can help you also. One, safety of withdrawals letter. And this is something that came up a few months ago, and it's worked its way into our day-to-day practice. It refers to a document we offer to our clients that allows us to consult with other chosen family members. And with the privacy laws, you know, you have to have written permission to do this anymore, or any other representative for that matter, on concerns which might arise during your course of business. For instance, the number, the size, the frequency of monetary withdrawals from accounts where the client didn't have this pattern in the years that you've been together. Maximum transfer amounts can be established with the custodian of your funds so that if suddenly you've been going along, taking out a couple grand a month or something, and you want $50,000 or $100,000, the signal gets sent out to the person, the planner, and any designated representatives as a potential red flag. You can limit trading authority at the custodial level so that an account owner who is in some state of decline will not trade away his or her wealth needlessly. Now, one of the historical problems with elderly investors emanates from advisors they have used and too often trusted for a long time. We see story after story about elder abuse by advisors. What can an investor do to prevent these problems from occurring? Well, nothing's 100% certain, but there are simple steps that you can follow to select a reliable advisor, monitor the progress, and intervene when something seems not quite right. First, when looking for a financial advisor, there are criteria that should be followed before scheduling any interviews. First, look for a certified financial planner, CFP designation, who is in good standing with the CFP Board of Standards, that website, www.cfp.net. Then determine that the planner publishes his or her acceptance of the fiduciary standard in the firm's ADV Part 2, which holds him or her to the promise that the client's interest will always be placed first. Look for the term fee only. Do not accept the term fee-based. They are different. Fee-based means that commissions can enter into the planning relationship and there is no longer a 100% fiduciary responsibility. Ask where your money will be held and how you can see it independently every minute of every day on a website of a recognized third-party custodian. Look for the advisor's affiliations in groups such as the FPA, the Financial Planning Association, or NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. This will assure you that the advisor adheres strictly to the fee-only standard. I'm going to wrap up just a little bit of this after the hard break that's coming up, and then Adam's going to talk a little bit about a topic that was introduced recently that regards mortgages and 401ks. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the final segment of the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And time is doing what time tends to do between 10 and 11 on Saturday morning, just flying away. I want to wrap up the points I was making about investors getting older and the safeguards that can hopefully prevent you from having catastrophic mistakes made. If the client's been active in stock trading and is kind of getting toward that period of time where maybe their decisions aren't so good or the risk tolerance is down or whatever, move to a more passive portfolio, more mutual funds, more exchange traded funds, and get over the stock picking thing. And you know, frankly, a lot of the advice I'm giving is good for any age anyway, but it's particularly important
as we most people are terrible at stock picking anyway.
They really are.
So
if you think you can beat the market, folks, you're in the wrong place. The portfolio should be examined for any items that are not clearly understood or for which origins cannot be easily determined. What are those orphans doing in there? Let's get rid of them. Attend quarterly meetings, either in person or by phone, Skype, FaceTime, or whatever means is available with your advisor. Maintain the contact with the advisor, the portfolio, and if you have designated anyone else who is a trusted friend or surrogate of any sort. Learn the warning signs of potentially risky investments, such as promises of outsized returns or guarantees. I got a lot more on that either later today or next week. Living longer is a statistical fact of modern life. We can't all be the lucky ones, but we'd be foolish to treat our retirement planning with any expectation of it not being so. The objective of financial independence requires a consideration of longevity, as the last thing we want to do is outlive our money. Study after study shows there are only two things that people fear worse than death. One is public speaking, and you can get over that. I'm living proof. And the other one is running out of money, and you can't get over that. I'm living proof.
All right. I promise that if you start losing it any more than you already have, I will let you know.
Will you know?
And also, I wanted to bring up, it's amazing that as a financial planner, we probably talk about health and death as much as doctors do.
We probably do.
All the time. It's a conversation that we have multiple times a day.
Well, you know what doctors do when they get together. They talk about money.
They probably do, actually.
That's true.
That's kind of funny. Yeah. We did have a listener question that was emailed to me, and I actually introduced it a few weeks ago. It was from Brenda, and Brenda wanted to know if she could refinance her house or take money from her retirement account to pay off her debt. And so a few more things about Brenda. She's 65, still working, and makes a six-figure salary. She is married, isn't married, but has a longtime significant other. She has a reasonable mortgage. She owes $140,000 on a house that is worth about $300,000. And she has over $600,000 saved in an IRA, and she's still contributing to her 401k. So she's in really good shape overall, but obviously that being 65, thinking about retirement, I would say, and doesn't want to work forever and wants to know if it's okay to take a mortgage into retirement, or is it worth pulling it out of your 401k or your IRA. And there are a couple other things she wanted to accomplish. She has some credit card debt, and she needed to fix up a little bit on her house. So overall, she'd have about $200,000 in a mortgage if she refinanced, and she would have to take out closer to $300,000 from her IRA to pay off the debt, because you will be taxed on that money. And because she's already making a good salary and she's single, that money is going to be taxed at either probably into the 33% tax bracket, I would guess. So you have to take out a significant amount of money in order to do that. So when you run the numbers, is it worth taking out half of your retirement savings to pay off a debt that's going to cost you about $1,000 a month into retirement if you refi? And my answer is no, it is absolutely not. You can't wipe out your savings just to avoid paying $1,000 a month. That portfolio can provide you that $1,000 a month that will pay your mortgage, and you'll still have the principal sitting there in case something really bad happens. So in this case, I would say absolutely do not do that. Go ahead and do the refi, pay off your other debt, take that mortgage into retirement, and just be comfortable with the fact that you have enough money to provide income to pay down that mortgage.
There's something called the rich ratio. The rich ratio says, and what you want is a number that's one or larger. It says add up all of your retirement income streams that you're going to have once you're done working. Mm-hmm. So Social Security, pensions, whatever, and include a reasonable return, like a 4% return that you can take out of your investments, and divide that by your debts or your spending, I mean, which include retiring your debts. So if you have a $4,000 income and a $3,000 expenditure monthly, you've got a 1.33 rich ratio. If that thing can stay well above one, because all this extra money, like 4% of $300,000, that's another $1,000 a month, if that cost is less, if the principal and interest costs of repaying that debt is less than $1,000, your rich ratio actually goes up when you do it that way, where it would go down if you paid off your debt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of consideration that we make with people. It's always an individual thing, and it's always best done with someone who knows enough to ask all the right questions, which is why you should always use a certified financial planner.
And then what are your thoughts in general on taking a mortgage into retirement?
I plan to.
Okay.
If I ever retire.
So you're okay with it?
I'm fine with it. I have two forms of debt, good debt and bad debt.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Good debt is when you live in. Bad debt is everything else.
I disagree. I think student loans fall under good debt if you took them out for the right reasons.
Yes, if you did that. And that's not always true. But let's assume for now that any student loan that you took was taken to increase your income and therefore increase your rich ratio,
right.
Then you're fine.
Yeah.
But I would really like to think that by the time someone retires, their student debts would be retired.
I would hope so. But you never
I can
know.
Think of exceptions.
Yeah, you never know.
I would tell you, $39.61. That's the answer. What's the question?
How much was your student loan payment for
exactly
20
right.
years?
I paid that thing off in the year 1976, maybe. And I can remember writing that check like it was yesterday.
Oh, I can't wait. I've got about 6 more years and mine's gone.
Yeah, and you talk about significant milestones in your life. Paying off something like that is as important to me as almost any significant thing that happens to you. So, that was good debt, but it's good debt when you're younger, better than when you're older, I think.
Yeah, and then credit card debt, always bad debt.
Always bad
There's
debt.
No such thing as a good credit card debt.
Car loans, get them paid off by the
debatable.
Time you retire.
Debatable.
Yeah, I mean, if you can. Yeah, I know if you beat your cars to death, 10, 12, 15 years,
yep.
And then you go out and buy a new one and you get free money or 1% or something like that. Yeah, I can make an argument for doing that.
I mean, that's basically what I've done recently. Mm-hmm. Is I had an old car. It was 2003. My wife's is a 2001. Mm-hmm. And we just needed something that was safe and reliable to get our kids around when we travel in. And that was the primary driver of the purchase. But I got the money for less than 2.5%. So
and what's
why
the,
not
what's the annual rate of inflation nowadays?
I mean, I'm reported very low, but actual over 3% easily.
That money is, it's better than free.
Right.
If you really look at what's going on with
it. Yeah. And that was the decision I made.
Besides,
I'll finance it.
I'm not letting you retire for a long time, so you should be fine.
I don't want to retire. I'd be bored.
Me too. You know, just you can be 66 and still enjoy what you do if you're doing the right thing. I wish everybody liked their jobs as much as we do, but it can't be that way. Anyway, Patrick Churchill. Ex-advisor to a bunch of very sad people. He used $2.5 million in client funds to buy his waterfront home in Barrington, Rhode Island.
Sounds nice.
Yes. It was all tied to the $21 million that he ripped people off for. Now, I always like to have a little moral to the story. How can there be $21 million under one guy's management without any one of those people logging onto a third-party independent website saying, where the heck's my money? People, you've got to take control. You've got to keep control. Just because you have an advisor does not mean you have someone trustworthy. Always know where your money is. Always know how much you should have. Always be able to see it independently. Don't go through your advisor to see it. And you will always know where it is. You don't always make money every year, but don't let unaccounted for funds ruin an otherwise very good day. So if there's no other lesson you take away today, it's keep control. Well, we got to run. Thanks for being with us. Be here next week. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.